You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Mike Carpenter.
Howdy.
Mike, it's good to have you here this morning.
Thank you.
So the way we start the show is with just the big general question, who are you? What do we need to know to start this conversation?
Well, before I say that, I just want to say one other thing. I didn't really know about this show until about a week or two ago. Got an email from you, talked to my son about it, looked it up online, listened to some of the interviews. And I just wanted to say I really admire what you're doing. I think it's a great thing, the interviews, and you've done it for a while. You've stayed up with it. You've been really, and it's a great thing. And
Thank you.
I just wanted to say how admirable it is to me.
Thank you. So, thank you.
Beyond that, for me, what you would need to know about me, maybe I'm 70 years old. There's a context for that, which is why I would say it. A white male, again, a context for that. Beyond that, I guess in some sense, who I am is just one of those people that are out there. All of us are just sitting and trying to figure out what it is we're doing here,
right,
where we're starting from, what we're here to accomplish, what do we want to learn, what are we, you know, I don't really know what's going on yet, and I'm trying to work on that, and
right,
it's 70 years, I'm still working on it, and will be until whenever the time comes to go on to the next thing.
So, but do you want to say something about the twists, any of the twists and turns, or will we get into, do you want to just wait and get into that when we get into the conversation?
There are so many twists and turns. We could spend the whole hour just talking about it.
We could.
You know, one thing I would say, I was thinking about on the way over, about 10 years ago, I did something very, very, very significant in my life, which I had no awareness at the time was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a ceremony at one of the local kind of alternative religious institutions we have, and something they called the burning bowl, where you write a piece of paper and say something that you want to get rid of in your life and let go of in your life. And I sat and thought about it for a while. I'd never really done that before, and said, what is it that I want to let go of? And the thought in mind was really everything but love, because there really wasn't anything else that mattered at that point in my life. And that's become more so in the last 10 years as well. It was an incredible change over the last 10 years because of deciding to do that. And it seems offhanded, and yet at the same time, it was real. It was something I said, I just want to let go of everything but love in my life. And in the meantime, I've gone through hell. I've gotten back on my feet again. It's been up and down. It's been all over the map. And yet, I wouldn't trade it an instant for all the things I've been through in the last 10 years. And I feel like that today is me. That's where I am, and that's kind of how I got to where I am today. Before that, during the course of that, there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
And you have framed your life in a way that's bigger and more succinct simultaneously than just about any guest in the first moments out. Let's go to the John Prine piece, and then we'll come back to this.
Sounds good. Yeah.
And it's this is a piece that I fell in love with when I was, I don't know, maybe a teenager. It's a beautiful song. John Prine, Hello in There. And do you want to say anything about it before we play it or after?
No. It's a good song.
Okay.
Apartment in the city, me and Loretta like living there. Well, it'd been years since the kids had grown a life of their own and left us alone. John and Linda live in Omaha, and Joe is somewhere on the road. We lost Davy in the Korean War, and I still don't know what for. Don't matter anymore. You know that old trees just grow stronger, and old rivers grow wilder every day. Old people just grow lonesome, waiting for someone to say hello in there. Talk much more. She sits and stares through the back door screen, and all the news just repeats itself like some forgotten dream that we've both seen. Someday I'll go and call up Rudy. Work together at the factory. What could I say if he asked what's new? Nothing what's with you. Nothing much to do. You know that old trees just grow stronger, and old rivers grow wilder every day. Old people just grow lonesome, waiting for someone to say hello in there. So if you're walking down the street sometime, spot some hollow ancient eyes, please don't just pass them by and stare as if you didn't care. Say hello in there.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Mike Carpenter. So Mike, you made a commitment to dispense with everything but love about 10 years ago, if I heard you right.
Right.
My guess is, what changed? What was it about love that became clearer to you, or what became about the other things that had become more expendable to you that you were able to make that focus? What was happening?
Well, I understand the question as you're
maybe
asking.
Maybe the wrong question.
No, it's okay. No, it's a good question. It's just let me just kind of do a takeoff on it a little bit.
Sure, go.
Nothing changed and everything changed, which is a little, you know, it's kind of a hokey answer, but it's true.
It's the paradox of life.
Yeah, it's what it amounts to is that it's just your vision, the way you look at the world changes, and nothing really changes in a real visible everyday way, other than that how you respond to the things around you slowly and gradually changes in terms of how you feel about those things around you, and that actually changes the things around you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I really do believe that we make our own lives, that we that the things that happen to us are choices. I know it seems heartless in some ways on a smaller scale, on an everyday scale, to say, well, I didn't choose that. I didn't want to get hurt, or I didn't want someone to die in my life. But we do die. Mm-hmm. As we get older, we realize that it's not an if anymore, it's a when, and it always was a when. It just wasn't part of our awareness as younger people.
Right.
But when we find ourselves in that position, we think, how is it that we want to respond to what's going on around us? What is it that we want to choose for our lives? And the magic thing about it is that that actually does change our lives. That just wanting to have things differently, just making mm-hmm. the choice to have our life be different and to have what comes to us be a particular thing that we want to come to us, and then find that it really happens. First of all, it gives you belief, it gives you confidence, it gives you an understanding that life isn't random,
right?
That things don't just happen to us, that the things that happen to us are lessons for us and directions to go and ways to learn, ways to grow. And it just makes it bigger. It's like if you imagine that you lived inside of a balloon all your life, and suddenly the balloon popped and all of your essence, all of your air that was in that balloon was suddenly out in the larger space. Mm-hmm. You were still the consciousness and the awareness that you were.
Right.
But now here you are in this much, much larger world, and the sun is shining and the wind is blowing and the water is on the grass, and it's like, whoa, this is a whole different place than I thought it would be, and there's so much more to it that's going on.
Right.
When you allow yourself to just respond with that feeling inside, with that love, which is something that all of us are, all of us do, all of us feel, it's just we have to hide it so much. You know, little kids feel it. Sometimes if you're lucky, when you get old, you can get to feel it again. But we hide it behind our clothes and behind our thoughts and behind the words that we do and the feelings that we bottle up inside us. And we just don't let it be out there in the world. Well, when we let it be out there in the world, gosh, it makes such a change.
Yeah, yeah. And you've said something really clearly that I want to go back to. And it's that when you have this intention, life doesn't become just this random set of things. Now, I'm going to play with that, because there are some kind of science-based detractors who want to say that life is a lot of random stuff.
Right.
But
right.
What you're saying is that the person has a subjective experience of this, what we might call more objective reality. And my intention make sure that whatever comes to me, I see with consistency and coherence.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I have that experience of I don't yet know how to love this thing that boggles my mind or that frustrates or hurts me, but there's something in there that I'm looking for, and it's constant. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
And so when a person comes to that moment in their life that they can see that it's always been there, they're not saying that it's always been out there. It's always been in me.
Exactly, yeah.
And I just haven't owned it, taken responsibility for it, and worked with it.
It's hard sometimes.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm not. Yeah. But yeah. And this happened to you in the kind of clarity at the age of 60.
Well, it been happening. It doesn't
coming.
Happen all at once.
No,
yeah.
And by words fail me.
Yeah.
Because, right. We come in and out of awareness, and we have more or less skill on a given day or a given moment in our lives.
Definitely.
So just what has been, you know, where are you from? What's been the arc of your life? Or the many fragmented trails, however, whatever imagery you want to put to it.
If that's significant to know, that's fine.
Well, no, it's only significant to know and to understand how you were becoming progressively more aware of what you wanted to let go of and what you wanted to embrace.
I understand.
Because when we tell the practice of our lives, even though it was messy, we give other people a sense to think about the skills that might be helpful without being didactic or condescending.
I gotcha. Yeah. That makes sense. I like that idea, yeah. Growing up, small town, upstate New York, typical, whatever, middle class life. Getting to be 14, 15 years old, realizing that there actually was something going on out in the world that we don't really see when we're kids, you know, but when I came into the connection with the world, it was very painful.
What was that to me that you came aware of?
Oh, I think probably it has to do with puberty, most likely, but more than puberty happens, lots of chemical changes, all these hormonal things happen inside you, and I think it triggers a kind of consciousness, a kind of a conscious awareness.
And a self-consciousness.
Yeah. Self-consciousness is a good word, yeah, and you become aware that you are actually this person interfacing with all these other people that are around you. It was tough for me. I didn't really belong. I don't know who does feel like they belong at 15 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably not many of us, most likely. But it was very, very painful to me, you know, sitting in my room in the middle of the night writing poetry, saying, you know, just, whoa, what's going on? I don't understand this. Feeling a lot of mental anguish, anxiety, pain, things like that. I didn't last with it very long before I found a way out of it, which was basically alcohol. So in those days, you could be 15 years old and find something to drink easily. So alcohol
it's
was...
not so different today either.
Probably not. Probably even easier today. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
So alcohol was great to kind of kill you and make you go to sleep and get you through to the next day, which happened for a while. I did leave the town early when I was 16. I actually went to college after 11th grade because I just didn't really belong there anymore and lasted about one class of each course in college before I stopped going to those and spent the rest of my time in the pool. Went to Mexico City for a while, wandered around the world for a little bit, went back home for a while. At 18 years old, I went to help out at what was called a Summerhill type school, which was like a free school back from the 60s. They paid you $2 a week to come and work your butt off for 80 hours a week, basically. Which was great. It was a community. It was the thing that I was looking for.
And you were 18.
I was 18, yeah. And I was looking for community. I mean, that's what was missing in small-town America in those days, and I'm afraid it still is in many, many cases. But to me, this was great. This was early 60s, 1962, 63. I did actually meet someone there, a woman, a girl, that fell in love with me rather than the opposite way around, although it took a little while for me to fall in love with her because I didn't really know what that was all about. But we got together at that point.
You had some sorting yourself out to do.
Yeah. We did get together. We left the school, wandered around. She actually had to go back home because she was not 18 years old yet. And she had to go back home to where her parents were when we left the school. And we actually just left her home. I went out to California. She followed me on a plane, took all of the pictures of her that she could find, and disappeared from her life at the age of 16. And we wandered around California for probably the next 4 years, Oregon, Washington, the West Coast. There was a lot going on then, Haight-Ashbury and Los Angeles and communes and many, many different places you could go and travel to and talk to people. And this was the height of the hippie generation, as it's called these days.
And you were a little bit on the younger edge of that at the beginning and then very much in the middle of it.
I was, when I was 16, I was definitely a beatnik. I read Jack Kerouac and everybody else that did that. We lived in San Francisco and the North Beach for a while. And, you know, we kind of got to experience a lot of that whole growth of consciousness that happened during that time. And it definitely was a growth of consciousness. And it wasn't something that everybody took part of. Well, everybody did take part of it in their own way. Some people took part of it by taking a lot of drugs and just thinking that this was how your consciousness expanded. And in a sense, it did to a degree. You could glimpse another aspect of the world in an intoxicated state. when you stopped being intoxicated by the drug, you just went back to your world again. So then you had either make the choice to try and attain that place in your own growth, or right. to just keep doing it with the drug. And unfortunately, I think for our generation, most of us decided just to keep doing the drugs until it was kind of not really doable anymore, and then went on to something different.
You had said at 15 that was one of your coping mechanisms.
Continued to be a coping mechanism for a lot of years. Anxiety, I think, is energy. This is something that I learned much, much later on in life. This was actually something I learned more like 65. But when you have a spiritual energy inside you that's not being expressed, that's not being used in a way that's creative and satisfying and constructive for your life, it builds up just like any other kind of energy would in your mm-hmm. body, just like if you just sat all day and didn't use your muscles. I really think that anxiety is really the buildup of that energy. And until you learn and understand and maybe feel the right to do it, to use that energy, it often builds up inside you. And I think it builds up inside of us. I think we all feel anxiety to one degree or another.
Right.
To me, it was an incredible buildup of anxiety that I couldn't really deal with. And I needed to blunt it with alcohol or drugs or whatever it might be.
Right. You've just given me another definite. Anxiety is the unfocused and unaddressed energy that a person has.
Yeah, really good with words. I like that.
And yeah. It's just, well, I grew up in a culture where that was, you better get good with words because that's the only thing you have.
Gotcha.
But it just makes it so that you want to find a way to be accountable to it rather than to push it back down.
You have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to. It's going to just keep coming back your whole life until you find a way to do it. Yeah. Yeah. That's what life does to us, which is good.
Yeah? If we don't learn the lesson, we get put in a situation
we don't learn the lesson with the first time, it just keeps coming back and coming back and coming back.
Yeah. Let's take a musical break. Where should we go next in your music?
Let me see.
I'll do the station ID while you think.
Yeah, the best one is probably an Incredible String Band.
Okay, and you're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca.
Seasons they change, while cold blood is raining. I have been waiting beyond the years, now over the skyline I see you're traveling, brothers from old time, gathering here. Come, let us build the ship of the future. In an ancient pattern that journeys far. Come, let us set sail for the always islands, through seas of summer stars. Thank you.
but with a gaze unchanging. Oh, deep-eyed sisters, is it you I see? Seeds of beauty ye bear within you, of unborn children, glad and free. Within your fingers the fates are spinning, the sacred binding of the yellow grain. Scattered we were when the long night was breaking, but in bright morning converse again.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Mike Carpenter. That song was The Circle is Unbroken by the Incredible String Band, and Mike, why did you pick that?
Very appropriate time in the talk. That was really, to me, the essence of what was going on in the time period of the 60s. There were people that felt this, oh, it's been a long time and we haven't seen each other forever and we've been living in this world that's very, very cold and untouching, unloving, and we're finding each other, and it's a struggle. Unborn children, wild and free, that certainly happened. To a degree, it got lost, or let's say it went into gestation, a butterfly coming from a caterpillar. And the gestation period, I think, is just now, in my mind, or at least for me in my life, coming to a point of emergence again. And at the same time, I feel like I can see in the world that it certainly is a lot of pain and a lot of violence and a lot of trouble and a lot of struggle going on. Mm-hmm. But I think that's part of this emergence process, is that struggle. And I really feel like the ideals and the understanding of, there's no better word for it than community in my mind, that was first really brought to the forefront in the 60s is now ready to emerge in a much larger sense in the world today. And I see it in young kids. One of the things that I've thought lately a lot about is youth and age. And we keep saying that we should listen to old people and pay attention to them and that there's wisdom there. And there is wisdom there to a degree, just like there's wisdom in young children. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, evolutionary understanding in terms of spiritual awareness comes from the young, so that as we get older, we have as much to learn from young people as young people from us, and perhaps even more. There are little beads of wisdom here and there, but I find myself watching the young people and saying, ah, wow, these guys are actually doing what I wanted to have happen years and years ago. I'm really, really excited by it and really warmed by it inside. Mm-hmm. It's great to see.
So what are the, I guess, I was too young. I was born in 1958, so I was too young to experience the 60s as the 60s.
Right.
My older siblings all did, but my younger brother and I didn't. What I saw, because I grew up in an environment where community was still a reality. It wasn't something that had, most of the country, any of them, there's a sociologist who said that the last measurable role of community in American life happened around 1955, 1956, and then it's kind of real disintegration, very rapid disintegration after that. in terms of general indicators about how people regarded each other's informal relationships. And so it created an environment where it was falling apart, and the youth caught that falling apart in the 60s immediately, and they knew what was wrong, but they didn't know what to do with it. And then part of the drugs is kind of, you know what's wrong, but you don't know what to do with it. And then you have to go make a living, so you compromise in other sorts of ways. And then finally around retirement, you figured out, oh, shit, I knew some of this stuff. And I've actually helped to make a world that my kids can do things that I couldn't do. But we still haven't faced the bigger issue, which is how do we create a quality of regard for one another, which is based on a sense of common ties, even though we may be completely different values and everything else. But how do we hold that?
Yeah. I'm going to go back a little bit.
Sure.
The sociologist fellow from the 50s. There are so many ways of seeing the world. There's as many ways of seeing the world as there are
us
people in it. So, you know, it's great. We could read something and we can see an aspect or a context that somebody sees the world in, which is great. And we can use it. At the same time, there is no beginning. There is no ending.
Right.
There's no last and there's no first.
Right.
We're all just keeping going. But I think what you said is very true. I think the 60s really felt a lack of what was going on there. And for whatever reason, whether it's if you believe in astrology, whether you see the Neptune in Libra, Uranus in Gemini, people being born then with the air sign and having all new ideas or whatever it may be, because of wars or because of this, that, or the other. There's a lot of different reasons, but whatever it is, it happened that all of us were affected by a certain kind of awareness, understanding, energy that was happening in the 60s. Some of us took it one way, some of us took it another way, and the few of us, I think, that really were inspired by it have followed through with it for a long time. I know in me and my work that I do, which is building, I took a different aspect of looking at how you provide places for people to live, which is basically you do it as cheaply as possible. You ask for enough money for you to live on and pay your bills and feed your family, and you see it as you see the larger context of the world you live in as your community. And, and really, in the end, we do have to expand our smaller communities to include larger communities as much as we're possible. We just go as large as we can. And sometimes these days, with the internet and everything else, many of us are trying to include the whole world in that as well, including the animals and the trees and the earth that we live on. It's really, there's no end to what we can do with it. In the context of that, let me go back to a little bit. Later on in the 60s, again, my girlfriend, who was then my wife, and I started a community in Vermont, 1968 or so. Did that for a while, lived in many other communities, went and visited other communities, and then found that when we had children, we wound up having quite a few of them, the people that we lived in with community that didn't have children or that just had younger ones or one or so really didn't understand how family fit into the context of community. So for us, family then became our community, and we went off into our own space, raised kids for a lot of years, 40 or so. And just finished up actually last year with the last kid graduating from college in May this year. That's a little bit of an impetus to me to say, okay, now I am actually ready to go on to a larger context of community that is going to include the community that I live in around me. And to me, that at this point is the town that I live in, Enfield, and the city that I'm close to, Ithaca, and the county that we're in, Tompkins County, and maybe a little bit more of central New York area.
Right.
But to me, my need, my desire is to find a way to develop community in the context of that slightly larger group that I'm living in now, not to get a piece of land and live with a small group of people and try and make that work out. Although they're, for many people in the place that they're in, that may be where they, what they need to do right now.
Right. I guess one of the things that I want to toss out here, which is a slightly different observation, because this is where I have spent most of my life reflecting on community, doing undergraduate and graduate work and this kind of stuff. And what I, community is assumes a stance where people look at each other as no more, no less than each other, and they're open to whatever they can be to do together, whether, and they don't do for each other what they can do for themselves, because that's the responsibility of the person who has the skill, right, or the resources, yeah, but they do for each other what they can't do for, yeah, themselves. And community is built on this absolutely level playing field of human beings, even though we don't have it. Now, society is built on this idea that you have specialized knowledge, resources, and things that are privately your own. And we do need, and we operate in both the social and the community spheres, right, at the same time.
Gotcha.
But the society is about, you know, your technical skill or your competence, your status, and sometimes your wealth.
What
and,
you look like on the outside.
But also it does sometimes affect your innards. Yeah. But so when I take it and look at it that way, what I find is an opportunity to help people to look at each other as potential friends, and as equals, mm-hmm, and where we don't do for others what they can do for themselves, we don't ask others to do for us what we can do for ourselves, but we offer what they can't, and we ask for what we cannot do.
Right.
And in that context, we change. We aren't so status driven.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I to me. I believe that kind of awareness is part of the energy or the engine that can make community more realized.
I think that's true. Let me, as you were talking, sure, about that, another aspect came to, sure, me, and certainly that is very true what you said, and that's a very visible part of it. What I did find from living in community with people, and this is just an awareness I've just gotten kind of recently, but it's not only what we need from, right, other people, it's the ability and the opportunity to be who we are.
Yes.
And that was so important for, yes, people, because, yes, we have to hide our emotions, we hide our bodies, we hide our thoughts, and to be in a community, which is, in a sense, a larger extension of the concept of family, only family, and in a much better way than many of us
family,
have gotten to
family
be
without
family.
The role restrictions of fathers, mothers,
exactly, yes,
children.
Yeah. So to allow ourselves, yeah, to be, yeah, in a place where others allow us to be ourselves is a big deal. There, yep, is so much energy release and so much pleasure,
right,
in that, that once you feel it, once you live in it, you think, that's what I want. That's better than any drug I could take.
Right. Right, and you are the author of your life, not by yourself, but in all of the relationships that you write on each other's books.
And you are.
Yeah, yeah.
When it comes,
yeah,
right,
yeah,
down, no, to,
yeah, 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 that's exactly,
it's
right,
like, why
it's
didn't
a truism.
I do this before?
Yes, yeah, yes, yes. Very, very much so. Let's cut to music again.
Sure.
And what should we play? What should we play next?
Oh... How about cut the lead on Dave Van Ronk?
Okie doke. Here we go. Another time and place. And we'll start about 20 seconds in.
First I met you years ago in another time and place. The thought came to my mind, I'd never seen a kinder face. A warmer laugh, a gentler smile, a eyes so full of light. I'd be a I didn't fall in love with you that night. We've tramped around the world, my dear, our fortune was to roam. Each place that I've been with you, that place has been my home. If now I wander on alone with no place to abide, I'll be content, for I was sent those wanderings at your side. Blossoms in the night, can't stand the test of time. It ebbs and flows, it comes and goes, no reason, reach, nor rhyme. As each day becomes another day, each year another year, I'd trade a year in heaven for a day with you, my dear. Miles flow on and I am gone to a wild and empty land, where time is like an empty room and space an empty hand. And the things we said and the jokes we made are echoes in the waste. We'll meet again where hills are green in another time and place.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and Mike Carpenter is our guest. So, Mike, how have you had to change in ways that you never would have imagined or maybe even wanted to?
Well, let's take the had to out of there, because it wasn't...
Or how have you changed?
Yeah, it's
yes.
I mean, everything we do is kind of had to, because we respond to the world around us. That's right. Kind of the reason we're
and
here.
And like you say, we have choice. Yeah. But there are times when it feels determined and not, but yeah. It's always choice.
Interestingly enough, one of the things that I found a few years back was that you can't ever make a wrong decision. Every time you make a decision that actually turns out to be wrong, you think about it later and say, why did I do that? It's always there again. You always get to make that same decision again until you get it right, actually, which was, it was a great concept for me. I stopped worrying about deciding things wrong.
Right. And that again is the subjective, bringing your life into alignment with the reality around you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of happens as part of the problem, but changed. One of the interesting things that happened, every once in a while, there's a little bit of advice that happens that you get from somebody that sticks in your mind for a long time, and then it suddenly comes up. I got a piece of advice from a man who was quite a bit older than me when I was 16 years old, who said I was talking about all the things I was going to do, this project and that project, and just in the course of the conversation, he said, you know, I found that the people that talk a lot about the things that they're going to do are usually the ones that never really do much of anything. And lately, that's been really sticking in my mind a lot. When you have thoughts, ideas, all the things that go through your mind about all the things you want to do, and we do talk them out, and we need to talk them out, but the talking part of it usually isn't the important part of it. The important part of it is what goes on inside us. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's happened is in my wife and I, who have been together 52 years now and have lots of kids and lots of experience behind us, we used to, as most couples do argue incessantly, sometimes often, about the same things, different things, but we had many, many things we had to disagree on, and it was always in the words. Sometimes we didn't bother trying to get the words straight with each other. Mm-hmm. And I think almost any argument that happens between two people, rarely do the words mean the same thing with each other.
Right,
but
right.
But I found that after a while that listening was a lot more important than the talking part right. of any conversation.
You're given two ears and one mouth,
quote,
right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly the point. And it came full scale one day when I was riding in the car with her home from somewhere, and we had argued for 15 minutes or so about some issue, and I just stopped and thought for a minute and thought, what is it that she's saying? And what is it that I'm saying? And then suddenly it came to me, oh, wait a minute. What she said is what I really think. And what I've been saying is just something, I don't even know how it got inside my head. And I just said, you know, you're completely right, I agree with you. Let's not argue about that anymore. And she looked at me and she said, yeah, that sounds good to me too. And so as time goes along, I find that I never really need to be right, particularly. I mean, whether I am right or not, for me, it doesn't really matter. We all are right for us.
Right.
But I don't really need to be right for other people. What I really need to do is hear what other people are saying and find out what's right for them. And usually in the context of what's right for them, there's usually something that they need and something that they're asking for. And if somebody is passionate about something, it comes from something inside them that they need or they feel strongly about. And so when we start to listen, we also start to feel, to see, and to be able to love, because it's not questioning ourselves anymore. We don't have to take it as a statement about anything inside us. Somebody's not arguing with us because there's something wrong with us. They're arguing because there's something that they need. And if we can stop thinking about the wrong with us, which is not easy to do, admittedly.
Right. And then there are times when people do attack, but most of argument is about the lack of clarity on the part of the person who's speaking.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. As I was trying to find a parking place, I pulled over on Seneca Street, not really in a good place. Lady behind me was pissed off, honked her horn for at least 30 seconds as she went by me. And, you know, typically that's going to be, oh, you, what? And instead, I just managed to get a, oh, geez, she must be really hurting today. Sunday morning, she's already feeling the pain. And
yeah.
Like, okay, sorry about that. And I'll try to not to do it again. And to me, where I've changed is, gosh, I've actually grown up a little bit. I actually am kind of an adult person, an adult human being, or what we think of as an adult, at least in our better ways of understanding. And I guess that's what has changed in me, is I'm not reacting so much anymore. I'm actually acting from inside me and allowing myself to become the person that I am, that I want to be inside, rather than this mishmash.
Right, right. And you've also honored a step that many people who want to stop reacting, they just want to act well. But you actually, in that story you just told, you stopped reacting, but you respond honestly, this person must be having a terrible day, and then, oh, I'll try not to do this sort of thing the right. next time. But it allows, because we are honestly frustrated. But it's, the frustration isn't what's coming from with us. It's coming sometimes, in that case, from her.
Yeah.
And you also were frustrated you couldn't find a parking spot.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And to honor it all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there is so much going on at any one given time out in the world.
Yeah,
obviously, we have to limit our awareness somewhere. But if we just look a little bit wider every day, we see, there's a reason for that one. That's for sure. So
what do you do? Implicit in your comments, I have a sense of spiritual discipline. And what do you do to take care of yourself physically, emotionally, intellectually, on a daily, weekly, monthly, you know, regular basis? And how do you know you need to do it?
Physically, emotionally, intellectually. Physically, obviously, taking care of your body. I think sexuality is really important. I think food is really important.
Yeah.
Obviously. being kind to your body, cooling it when it's hot and warming it when it's cold, and all those things that your body likes to feel. You
it
know,
tells you what it needs.
It does tell you what it needs. There's no reason to be unkind to it. There's no reason to say, oh, that's not allowed, or that's indulgent. And obviously, a certain amount of food can be not good for it, and,
sure,
and you
sure.
realize it and express it. Moderation in all things is to some degree a good motto,
right.
although certainly it has its weak points at times.
Well, if you're obsessed with moderation, it's not moderation
it's
anymore.
It's not moderation anymore. That's very true, yeah. But moderation with, I remember a story about Michio Kushi, the macrobiotics guy who had a friend of his that was walking with him, and he snuck into a McDonald's and ate a hamburger real quick, and the guy looked at him in horror and said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, you can't be macrobiotics without allowing yourself the freedom to go outside the regimen every once in a while. That's what macrobiotics is all about." So, So anyways, emotionally, what I've learned more and more is that we really need to allow ourselves to feel what we feel.
And just acknowledge it.
There's no two ways around that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you need to cry, then you should cry.
Yeah,
there's no way around it. If you need to get angry about something, well, that's okay. You don't have to scream at somebody, but you can certainly allow yourself to feel the anger and to know that it's okay.
And understand, this is, I'm working with some people on conflict issues, 120 students in a
gotcha,
Cornell class.
Right.
And you know, they fail to recognize that anger isn't the end. It isn't the fuel of conflict. Anger is a signal that there's something wrong here.
Yeah.
And just accept the signal and try to observe, what is this signal trying to tell me?
Yeah.
Rather than how do I fan it, or why do I have to pump myself up into an angry rage in order to confront something? It's just you know, just observe it.
What definitely try not to judge yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, what you feel is what you feel. There's nothing wrong with anything that you feel. And don't judge it. It may not be what makes you happiest. And in that case, you have the right and the ability to change it.
And you may need to change it if it's a stance towards another person that's having consequences that that they can't tolerate and you don't want.
And here, luckily, the mind comes in and says, oh, wow, I'm going to think about this a little bit. Do I really believe that? Or what are they really saying? Or how are we going to do this? You know. And so intellectually, how do you take care of yourself? I think it, in many ways it's the same thing as emotionally. You allow yourself the freedom to think and understand things and express those thoughts as long as you feel like you're safe to do it. Many times you're not safe to do it. And in a way, intellectually, it comes close to the physical as well, because you have to nurture yourself.
How do you nurture yourself intellectually?
I do a lot of reading.
And what kinds of things do you read?
Oh, gosh. Soup to nuts, pretty much. I read lots of different, I guess what you would call spiritual recipes, menus. There's a lot of them out
spiritual
there.
Spiritual guidebooks.
Spiritual. Yeah, I wouldn't say guidebooks. I would say more expressions of people that say what they think. I don't want other people to tell me how I should do it.
Okay.
But I'm happy to have other people tell me how they do it
their
and what
stories.
They think and believe.
Yeah.
Or their philosophies. I've been reading the Seth books lately by Jane Roberts, or with Jane Roberts, and I found that whereas I read them 50 years ago and wasn't attracted to them at all, I find now that there's much, much, much wisdom and understanding in them that are great. And I've read lots of other, and I kind of binge read. I'll get to somebody who writes something and I'll read all their books and let go of it and go on to somebody else. But and fiction is great too, and stories about dogs and how to take care of your whatever, you know, anything that happens. And music is great, because we express our thoughts and ideas and our feelings and emotions in music, and it's kind of a multimedia.
Well, music is expression. Physical, emotional, and
it's everything.
All
yep.
over.
Yep. If you can.
Are you a musician?
I don't.
Do you enjoy performing?
Do
music?
I have? No, I don't. I don't perform. Whether I would enjoy performing,
I'm not
I don't
talking
know.
About public, just for yourself. Do you sing?
I would. I love to dance around the living room, and I love to sing.
Yeah.
But usually, it's just for me.
Yeah.
When I can talk my wife into dancing around the living room with me, we will as well. So
yeah.
I don't have to talk her into it. I just have to find her free, is all. But
No, it sounds like, you know, life is a full throttle sport for you. You're going at it, but also. With your whole, you are fully engaged.
You know, it's really a cliche that people say this, is that you have to learn to love yourself before you can really love others.
Yeah.
Unfortunately or fortunately, it really is true at the same time.
Right. So what the wisdom of that statement, how has your life, how has the realization that you, when did that happen and how has that changed your relationships?
Well, it didn't happen yet in any complete way because I got a long ways to go on that one. I find parts of myself that say, oh God, you are a stupid, dumb jerk. But at the same time, I can be a little bit more patient with myself. Well, yeah, I guess you had reasons for it and maybe you don't do it next time, whatever. But the more you love yourself, the more you look into yourself, the more you allow to see of yourself that you can then love, what you find is that you are actually just like everybody else. And everybody else is just like you. And if you can love it in yourself and you see it in them and you say, oh, yeah, I remember feeling that. I remember thinking that. Or I still do feel that and think that. And God, it must be hell to be living in that and stuck with it and not be able to get out of it right now. And what you can do is take that awareness and do something with it. You can go to someone and say, you know what? Anxiety and depression are really, really hell to live through. At the same time, you will live through them. And the one thing about it is that you can come out in a much better place on the other side.
Right. And they can be tough but rewarding teachers.
Yeah.
If you let them teach you rather than try to fight them away.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Mike, it's been wonderful to get to know you.
Yeah, it's been really fun to talk. Yeah.
And we're going to close with Supertramp Take the Long Way Home. Do I say anything before I play it or just play it?
Just do that. Yes. Take the Long Way Home.
Yes.